Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist article causing trouble. Feature article, be rather interesting. It's from the 25th April. The language of science can't distinguish between cause and effect. Solving this problem could put research on a form foundation, reports Sir Julian Lee. This is going to be fascinating, the article. In the mid-1990s, an algorithm trained on hospital admission data made a surprising prediction. It said that people who presented with pneumonia were more likely to survive if they also had asthma. This flew in the face of all medical knowledge, which said that asthmatic patients were increased risk from the disease, yet the gathered data from the multiple hospitals were indisputable. If you had asthma, your chances were better. What was going on? It turned out the algorithm had missed a crucial piece of the puzzle. Doctors treating pneumonia patients with asthma were passing them straight to intensive care units, where the aggressive treatment significantly reduced the risk of dying from pneumonia. It was a case of cause and effect being hopelessly entangled. Fortunately, no changes were ruled out on the basis of the algorithm. Unweaving the true connection between cause and effect is crucial for modern-day science. It underpins everything from development of medication to the design of infrastructure and even our understanding of the laws of physics. But for well over a century, scientists have lacked the tools to get it right. Not only has the difference between cause and effect been impossible to work out from data alone, but we could know there's a causal analysis. In fact, there's actual... I've done that. There's a causal analysis. Does this cause that? You can actually do that from the data. You can actually do it from the data alone. Okay, what does it say? We have struggled to reliably distinguish causal links from coincidence. Hello, darling. Now, mathematical work could fix that for good, giving science the causal language that it desperately needs. This far-ranging application of our data-rich age, from drug discovery to medical diagnosis, and may be the essential tool to resolve this fatal flaw. I think I may have known about this 20 years ago. Okay, let's see if this is the same thing. A mantra most scientists can recite in their sleep is that correlation doesn't imply causation. A simple example illustrates the data from the seaside town tells us that the more ice creams are sold on a day, the more bathers are attacked by sharks. It doesn't mean that ice cream vendors should shut down in the interest of public safety. Probably not. A more sensible discussion is that the two trends are likely to be consequences of the underlying third factor. More people on the beach, in this case, the rise of ice cream sales. Shark attacks would be both caused by the rise of the beach goes, but not correlated to each other. This analysis seems simple enough. The trouble is that the data alone can't point us in the right direction. We need some external knowledge, in this case, that the surge of people enjoying the beach on a hot day can adequately explain both trends. To correctly distinguish correlation from causation, the data at hand gets more complicated and less familiar. However, our ability to distinguish between the two falls short. The subtleties were lost on some of the early pioneers of statistics. One notable offender was Carl Pearson, an English mathematician and prominent eugenicist of the 1900s. There's Ronald Fisher, my godfather, came out to retire in South Australia. He was a bit of a Nazi, a closet Nazi. He had a series of things. But you don't need anything like that to get going. Peterson believed the mathematics of correlation was a true grammar of science, with causation being only a special case of correlation rather than a separate analytical concept. The statistical tools he developed remain part of the bedrock of scientific practice and are taught at every undergraduate statistics class. As a result, for over a century, many scientific discoveries have been based on flimsy correlations rather than formal causation. This has implications far beyond the seaside. Data and correlation can tell you which of the two treatments led patients to recover faster, but not why. They also can't tell you how to make treatments better, or even what to prescribe answered to a given individual. Quote, if you want to actually cure a disease or make it less likely someone gets a disease, you need to have a causal understanding, says Jonas Peter, the University of Copenhagen, Denmark. Well, I don't know. I just seem to think artificial intelligence is an understanding without cause. I think a cause is something you can follow. Okay. The importance of understanding causality can't be overstated, as Elias Baringbaum of Columbia University in New York. Quote, I don't think there is any way of doing science without causality, he says. It is the code running the system. Oh, I don't know. I really don't understand that, because you've got induction, a wild hypothesis, and at the same time, science is poorly equipped to deal with the question of cause and effect. Since Galileo, modern science has been communicated using the language of algebra and equations. Well, technically past Galileo, Descartes, even beyond Newton. I don't think that's an incorrect statement. Physicists can write equations describing the relationship between atmospheric pressure and the reading on the barometer. But this equation says nothing about whether it is pressure that causes the barometer reading or vice versa. The language of algebra is completely agnostic to the question of which came first. Mm-hmm. In the early 1990s, dissatisfied with the state of affairs, Julia Pearl, the University of California, Los Angeles, set out to give science a causal language desperately needed. His solution was to introduce a new mathematical language of doing, allowing us to distinguish between cause and effect. If I do by intervening to force pressure on change, then the reading of the barometer will shift. But if I do a change in the barometer reading, the pressure doesn't alter as a consequence. Intervening on the cause will change the effect, but the intervention on the effect won't change the cause. To convey this mathematical terms, Pearl invented a new operation to sit alongside addition, subtraction and others. Just like the other operators, his do operator can manipulate variables, like the number of ice cream sold, in perfect specific ways. Whereas addition combines the value of two or more variables, the do operator sets a variable to a specific value irrespective of anything else. To see why this is needed, let's head back to the seaside if we wanted to establish the true thing. This is a little bit different from this causality analysis by Max Planck Institute. You can actually get things out this way. Relationship between ice cream eating and shark attacks and scientific best practices would be to carry out a randomized control trial. This would involve randomly assigning beach areas with two decision groups of equal size. One group would be given ice creams and the other wouldn't. Both would be then let loose in shark-infested waters, and the number of shark attacks on each group compared. The composition of subgroups is random, so all other potentially confounding factors such as age, height, tastiness of flesh are controlled. Any remaining correlation can be explained only if there is a direct causal relationship between eating ice cream and being attacked by a shark. Pearl's do operator mathematically stimulates changing the amount of ice cream someone eats, regardless of any confounding factors that would influence both the eating of ice cream and being attacked by the sharks. By changing ice cream consumption alone and keeping everything else fixed, any corresponding change in shark attacks is due to eating ice cream, as it is the only variable that is changed. Pearl's great insight was to show that if the do operator, you could effectively simulate a randomized control trial using only observational data, the exact causal connections. This was a game changer, because performing the real world randomized control trials can be expensive and complicated, not to mention unethical. To perform a control trial to examine the link between pneumonia and asthma, for example, half the group would have to be infected with pneumonia. The work won Pearl the Turing Award in 2011, the computer science equivalent of the Nobel Prize. It performed the foundations of what became known as the theory of causal inference. Oh, that's interesting. That's 2011's after the work on the Max Planck Institute. Besides putting science on a firmer causal footing, the mathematical framework is helping to solve problems of many disciplines, says Baron Blom, the chief among them, which is the reputational replication crisis that's plagued medicine in social sciences. In the past decade, doubts have arisen about many headline-grabbing studies in the field, from the notion that maths problems are easier for students to solve if written in fuzzy font, to the idea that willpower is finite, an inexhaustible resource, because the results of the underlying experiments couldn't be replicated. In 2015, a massive replicability study in psychology found that the results of 60% of the studies couldn't be reproduced, casting a vast shadow across the discipline. Baron believes that the causal inference could help clear these problems up. In many cases, he said, the original tests were susceptible to confounding factors the experimenters may have been unaware of. The subsequent replication attempts might have dragged new causal relationships into the mix. One classic example is the concept concerns the effect of happiness on economic decisions, which was originally measured by showing participants footage of a US comedian, Robin Williams. By the time the replication experiment was conducted, Williams had died, potentially skewing the participants' response. In addition, subjects of the original studies were from the US, but those in the replications were British. By not controlling for such confounding effects, the replication study cannot legitimately comment on the original finding. The applications extend well beyond science. As soon as you're looking to improve decision-making, you want to understand the cause and effect, which is, if I were to do this, how would the world change, says Sushi Sara, at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. Economists in particular were early to the party, realizing that many of the problems that they wished to solve required a causal toolkit. Such tools could determine the effect of specific policies, such as whether an increased tax on cigarettes reduces the health impacts of smoking. For such a complicated issue, however, Pearl's mathematical tools become incredibly challenging. The relationship between smoking and health is influenced by a panoply of confounding factors, including age, sex, diet, family history, occupation, years of education. To home in on the causal connections we are about, we can look at parts of the data where the other factors are constants. But for each confounding variable we control for, the corresponding data gets smaller. Eventually, we are left with so little data that no robust conclusions can be drawn at all. To overcome these difficulties, Susan Athey at Stanford University in California and her colleagues have developed techniques to approximate Pearl's methods while still holding onto as much data as possible. They aren't alone. Tools of this kind are also having a big impact on healthcare, in the area where understanding cause and effect can be life-saving. Knowing that a disease is highly correlated with a certain symptom or that a drug is correlated with recovery isn't enough, and basing medical decisions on such information is dangerous. Saria is using causal inference to create tools to help doctors make decisions by comparing the effect of different medical actions. However, working with medical data sometimes is challenging. Quote, we may be reflecting black biases that are not true underlying phenomena of nature, she says. For example, unequal access to treatment means the US spends less money on caring for black patients than for white patients. Some algorithms conclude from such data that black patients are healthier than equally sick white patients, which is patently false. From Kira Ranke, a technician at Technion, Israel Institute of Technology, causal understanding is a key to a more equitable healthcare system. Quote, if you don't understand the causal process, you're susceptible to bias in the data, she says, and as soon as you understand them, you can clean out the bias. This highlights one problem of causal interference can't solve. Before Pearl techniques can be employed, the causal relationships need to be known. Left to analyse shark attacks and ice cream sales data, for example, Now, they wouldn't be able to determine the connection between the two without knowing the increase of beachgoers could explain both trends. To qualitatively compute the effect of treating someone's symptoms with a certain drug, we need to know that a causal relationship between that drug and those symptoms exists. The standard approach is to find out from experts on subjects. But getting this causal knowledge from experts can be difficult and takes time, says Randesky. The approach she and her collaborators have taken to streamline this process is to mine causal relationships from medical papers that actually verify their existence through experiments. By applying these causal knowledge to drug repurposing, using existing medicines in new ways, they have already found new treatments for hypertension and diabetes. Yeah, there's many more effects. There's actually causal relationship analysis, which is outside. This person's missed it for some reason. He's a senior researcher at the University College London and Babylon Health, I don't know. Learning from the data, the fruitful power and powerful approach, but not every field has this large collection of online research papers with proven causal links just waiting to be exploited. And this has led researchers in other disciplines to wonder if causal relationships could be discovered from purely observational data. The age-old difficulty of distinguishing correlation from causation would seem to rule this out. Yet a new generation of researchers bold enough to investigate the problem are starting to realise that it might not be impossible as it sounds. One approach gaining grounds involved looking for patterns that hold true regardless of circumstances. Increased atmospheric pressure always causes barometer readings to change, for example, regardless of whether you're in London or New York, Earth or Mars. Likewise, to physicians in different hospitals, the countries may differ in how they treat people, but the underlying causal relationships between diseases and symptoms don't vary. The key idea behind the new work being led by Peters and others is that the consistency can act as a signature of an underlying causal process, allowing Pearl's tools to be deployed. To put this principle to the test, he and his colleagues divided into complex sociological questions, the true case causes of the country's total fertility rate. The rates vary dramatically around the world. The understanding the factors determining them could be a boon for governments seeking to support their populations. By looking for consistent patterns in the data in multiple countries, Peter and his colleagues found that mortality rates for young children were important drivers of fertility rates, a finding that tallied with the previous studies around the world. When a children's fertility rate is high, families tend to have more children, even if none of their own children have died. This is Adrian Rafferty, sociologist and statistician at the University of Washington in Seattle. This may be proactive to try to make sure that that they do have a family. Brougham is excited about the group's ability to obtain causal insights from the observational data alone. When that work came along, it was amazing, he says. Peters and his collaborators are now using the invariance principle to paint a causal principle, a picture of the biosphere and atmosphere interaction, which potentially dramatic consequences for our understanding of climate change. Oh dear, this sounds really flaky. But like Pearson's statistical analysis over a century ago, it isn't a silver bullet. To truly disentangle cause and effect and correlation, scientists will always need extra contextual information. Without knowing how beachgoers behave, for instance, or how the doctors treat people with pneumonia if they have atmosphere, no analysis in the world could currently parse the largest data set. The problem is the data generating processes, not the limits of our brains. If it's causal analysis, or if they're correlated, it tells you that there is a cause between the two. It doesn't tell you the direction of the cause. And then there's this analysis, statistical analysis. It seems really dumb to me. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close.
It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.